Hey guys, I want to take a few moments to thank Sneak Tech Sneak Boots for their support of the show. They make it possible for me to keep it free, so please go check them out at sneaktech.com. I use them on all my hunts, and really they've upped my game, taken my stalks to the next level, so check them out. I also want to take the time to thank you, my listeners, for the support that you have given me, and I'd like to give back to those going that extra mile. So once a month, I will be giving away a pair of Sneak Tech boots and two t-shirts to three subscribers of the podcast who have left a comment or feedback on iTunes or Podbean. Thank you. Now let's roll into the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Phoenix Shooting Bags. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about hunting deer, mostly. In Colorado, I have Brent Morrill on the phone with us, and Brent is a killing machine. He was recommended to me actually by my good friend Henry Ferguson, and you know Henry's been on the podcast a few times, and always a wealth of knowledge. And when he tells me this that he's a killing machine, I believe him. So, and I could see his mounts in his background over there. He's got doll sheep and big ass elk and cats and God knows what else up there. So what's going on, Brett?
Not much. I appreciate you having me on. This is fun. I don't get to talk hunting very much because my wife's heard all my stories, and so this will be a good time.
Nice. Awesome. Well, give us a little rundown about yourself. It's not very often that I have somebody on here that I don't already have kind of some kind of relationship with. So
right.
I'm curious. I'm in the blind myself. This is new for me.
All right. Well, I'm a Utah born and raised and grew up hunting a lot with my dad, but we mostly did waterfowl and pheasants, more bird hunting than anything. We went every year on the annual deer hunt like everybody else, but my dad always called it armed camping because we never got anything. So after graduating at Utah State, I moved to Ohio where hunting was a little slimmer there, did whitetail hunting, didn't really know what I was doing or have a mentor there. And then once moving to Colorado after school, I bought a dental practice here, and I've been working there for about 12 years and kind of picked up big game hunting on my own. I guess you could say I'm somewhat self-taught. You know, I didn't have a lot of mentorship, so I just started reading a lot and kind of focusing on mule deer being my favorite animal to hunt. I've hunted all over in several species. I've been to Africa and Alaska for doll sheep and hunted many different animals, but I still go back to mule deer are always my favorite. I go nuts if I don't have a mule deer tag every year. If I don't have an elk tag, I don't really care too much, but I've always got to have a deer tag in my pocket or right season, really. So,
nice.
I enjoy the mule deer, and I hunt a lot of the same areas that Henry hunts. We've known each other for years, kind of bumped into each other on the mountain, and became pretty good friends, and although we hunt a lot of the same areas, we are typically hunting different seasons, him being a big archery hunter, and I kind of focus more in the rut of the mule deer and hunt more with a rifle or a muzzle loader, but I've hunted them with a bow, but nowhere near as proficient as Henry is with that weapon. But
nice.
So, yeah, awesome. I try to focus on units I can draw every year or every other year so I can really get to know them, even though I guess you would consider them a lower quality unit versus, you know, units that take 15, 20 years to draw.
Right.
I'd rather hunt a unit I can hunt every year and really get to know it and get to know the deer in the area and where they focus on so that I can kind of make my game plan accordingly.
Yeah. You know what? You see it all the time. I've had this conversation with many, many guys, especially here in Arizona, because, you know, for elk, okay? Because we have a lot of deer tags, rifle deer tags. They're pretty easy to come by, you know, as you're going for coos deer. Muleys, not so much, but our muley tags are pretty hard to get. But elk hunting, guys put in for 10, 15. I just talked to a guy yesterday that called me up trying to book a hunt. And he's like, I got 15 points and this, and that. And he's like, I really want to hunt this unit, and this unit. Do you guide for him? I'm like, yeah, we guide for him. But I'm like, you got 15 points, you're probably not going to get drawn. And they've gone 15 years, and moral of the story is they've gone 15 years without elk hunting. You know? And this guy, okay, he's coming to me and I'm a guide. That's different. But there's so many guys out there that have 15 points that haven't elk hunted. They're finally going to draw that tag after 15, 20 years of waiting. And they're not going to know what to do because they haven't been elk hunting. They don't know the unit. They don't know, you know, it's like, so I'm with you. I'd rather draw a unit, you know, like every other year, every couple, 3 years, whatever, and really get familiar and whatever. And I feel like I have a much better chance of getting a big buck out of something like that as opposed to drawing, you know, let's say the strip and never been up there and just kind of willy-nilly going up there and shooting something, you know.
A high-end tag like that, you're going to spend years applying for, and you're not ever going to take the time to go study a unit that you may never draw in your lifetime. You know, I apply for the strip tag every year, but just because I'm obsessed with mule deer. But you know, I end up scouting every year to get to know it, because I honestly could live the rest of my life and never draw that tag. Versus a unit I can hunt here within an hour of my house. I can spend a lot of time in the unit during the summer, really get to know the deer, you know, and really have a good idea where they're going to be. And I kind of center what tag I want, whether it's a draw tag or a landowner tag. You know, even when I don't draw, I'm usually looking for a landowner tag. And in a unit that only takes one point to draw, you can typically pick those up fairly cheap, even though sometimes it can be hard to find. But I really gear my season to hunting local, and then my out-of-state tags I'm putting in for are tough to draw tags. You know, very difficult. Takes many years of applying to get those tags, but I always have a backup and something to rely on here, whether it's me with the tag or my son with the tag or my friend with the tag. Regardless, I'm hunting the unit,
There you go.
even if I'm not the one with the rifle.
And that's important. That's what I keep telling guys. I'm like, you need to go with your friends that draw it, you know, so you could at least get an idea,
Yeah,
you know.
sometimes that's more fun for me. You know, it's I put a lot of stress on myself to kill a big buck every year, and sometimes when I'm not the one with the tag, I enjoy the hunt even more because I can set aside that stress of getting him on the fun part with my buddy and helping him get a big tag and let him stress about it.
Every time I'm not the trigger man, that's when I find all
Oh
the
yeah, of course.
big shit.
Of
Every
course.
time, I swear to God, like never fails. Like just this weekend, I took my daughter and her friend and her dad javelina hunting. So, you know, I wasn't the trigger person. And we get on these pigs and we busted a herd. So I set a call out. I try to call him back in with a Fox Pro and called for like 5, 6 minutes and they didn't come back, but I could see them filtering above us. James, the guy that the father, he was going to shoot the muzzleloader. My daughter was using a crossbow. It was out of range for the crossbow, but we can get it with the muzzleloader. So I'm like, all right, let's set you up on the tripod. We get him set up, and he's looking through the scope, and he's like, I think I see him, but he's tan, like it's like a tan color, almost whitish. And I'm like, that's not a javelina. And I pull my binos up, and it's a mountain lion. We
Oh,
call in a
geez.
mountain lion. Like I never, every time we see a mountain lion, I never have my rifle. Or it's always I'm hunting with somebody else, and it's
Of
like
course.
never fails. Like I mean, I've killed mountain lions before, but I've never killed one like by like that situation, like glassing it up and whatever. I've killed them with dogs, you know. It's just like it's just a story of my life, you know. But
I don't know. I try to talking to other hunters, you know, and they'll talk about how they hunt the same unit I hunt, and they haven't shot anything in 10 years. You know, they've been hunting it every year, and I think back to my younger days, and I did the same thing. I grew up hunting the same place every year, We were just hunting wrong. My dad,
Yep.
he loved hunting, but our strategies were wrong. And so
Right.
when I moved here to Colorado, I had to kind of, I saw the people that shoot big stuff every year, and what are they doing different than what I'm doing? And I really started paying attention to what am I doing that they aren't doing, because obviously I've had a difficult time shooting big stuff. And in the past, I don't know, 12 years between my son and me and my friend and his son, we've probably shot over $1,000 over 175, between 175 and 227 in the same unit.
Wow.
Just spending the time in a unit that really wouldn't be considered a trophy unit by any means, but spending the time on the hill and watching these deer and keeping an eye on where they're moving, going to be at a certain season, has just been key in us shooting some nice bucks in a not well-known area for bucks of that caliber.
Nice.
So, when I moved here, I would just pull out a paper map. Most people don't do that anymore. But for me, that's key. We pull out a paper map and I circle every area in the unit that is at least 1.5 miles from any road, which in this unit, there's not many of those areas. And so we started concentrating on those areas, and that's where we've been finding these big bucks. And then spending time behind the glass. That's one thing we grew up doing wrong, was just hiking, hoping we ran into something
Yep. Taking your
versus
gun for a hike
buying.
in the woods.
That's right. That's right. Hoping you ran into something. We spent time walking through their bedrooms. It was just so ineffective. And when I figured out that you can pull out a paper map and buy some good optics, the best you can afford, and spend some time behind them, I think a big game changer has been getting good optics and putting them on a tripod. That's changed my life tremendously. Really played a big part in finding some of these big bucks that I wouldn't have found previously, just walking around. And with my dad, we always packed around 7-power little tiny binoculars, and that was about all we had. And now I think 90 is optics or tripods, one of the
It's crazy how
two.
what a shift that has become, because that kind of started here in Arizona. That whole putting big optics on a tripod, that spawned here, koos deer hunting, and now it's kind of like you see it's. I remember 15 years ago, I would go to Utah or wherever, and people see me bust out my saguaros and put it on a tripod, and they're hand holding their tens on their knees and whatever, and I'm seeing deer everywhere, and they're like, "How you seeing deer?" I'm like, "Well, you just don't have the equipment to look for it, just." It's still just, I mean, I still go to places and it just cracks me up that people do that, but that cracks me up. It's just, I'm actually glad that they do that because that gives me a little bit of an advantage,
An
but
edge, Just last year, I was hunting one of these areas that I typically have good luck in, and I got there, and there was a father and a son there, and I think it was their first time in there. Just kind of stumbled into this area because not many hunters know of this place, but they sat down maybe 50 yards from me and started glassing. I don't know that they knew I was there. And eventually I got up and walked over to them, because I knew the young boy had a maybe 12 or 13 years old, and I had seen probably, I don't know, 50 something deer in that canyon that we'd been glassing. And I walked over to him and asked him if they, had any luck finding anything or what they were looking for, kind of get an idea of what this young man was wanting to shoot. And I said, "Oh, we've been sitting here for an hour. We haven't seen anything." And they just didn't have the good enough optics, or didn't really know where to be looking, I guess, in the canyon. And so I pointed out a few smaller bucks for him and gave him the opportunity to go shoot one of these bucks. It's always fun to help a young hunter out. But I set down that tripod and the big 15s for him and pointed out a few areas, and he said, "This is almost cheating," looking through my 15s. And was able to point out several bucks for his son to go shoot. And I was packing out. This was a scouting trip for me, and I started leaving hoping to hear a gunshot, and I never did, but I don't know if he ended up getting one or not, but gave him $3 or $4 to go look at or chase after anyways. So
Nice.
yeah, optics are a huge thing, spending time during the summer scouting. Henry's a big scouter, and I kind of he's in the archery season. I do most of my scouting a little bit after the archery season. But here in Colorado, we've got our archery season and then a muzzleloader season in the middle of that. And then after the archery season, we've got a second, third, and fourth rifle season. I've always liked the second and fourth season a little bit better. Just if I have time to scout, which this summer I didn't have much time at all doing landscaping, but if I've got a lot of time to scout, I like the muzzleloader or the second rifle season because the deer are still in their patterns. Fourth season, I like if I don't have as much time to scout,
Yeah, because they're
because
ready.
some of these bigger bucks come out of the woodwork when that you wouldn't normally see. I kind of center my attention on areas that typically hold a lot of does because I know the bucks will show up. I've always considered third season the crapshoot season because if you do spend a lot of time scouting, they could be gone by the time third season comes around, breaking up from each other, and the bucks aren't really together anymore. If they're rutting, it sure helps, but oftentimes they're not. They're just getting started separating from each other and starting to find their does. And so I always consider third season kind of my crapshoot season. You never know what you're going to get. But that being said, I've killed some of my biggest bucks in third season too, but they typically aren't bucks that I had found during the summer. I've usually got a hit list, one through five or whatever, and typically any of them. So, and then they'll show up again in four seasons. So.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about let's talk about the draw for a second, and then we'll kind of go from there. So Colorado is very different. I still haven't wrapped my head around how first and second choice works and how you get to keep your bonus points versus it's still very foreign to me. I really started in Colorado as far as the draw very late. Only time I ever went there was to go hunt over-the-counter elk, and I was like, that's what Colorado's good for, over-the-counter elk, and I never really focused on anything else. I've been putting in for goats there for a long time, but I'll never draw that.
Sure. Like the rest of us. So the way their draw works, you have your first choice and your second choice. If you draw your first choice, you'll lose your preference points. If you don't draw your first choice, you'll gain a point, and they look at your second choice, and if there's tags enough for that after the first round goes through, if you draw your second choice, you keep your points and you get your tag as well, unlike several other states. Some of them, doesn't matter what choice you draw, lose your points. So there is a bit of a strategy. The unit I like to hunt, when I started here 12 years ago, I was actually able to draw the tag as a second choice, and so I could gain points as I was going. So you kind of had a little bit of the best of both worlds, be getting points and a tag every year. But that ended after 3 or 4 years. They cut the amount of tags by probably about 20% of the tags. And then it kind of started to get more and more known by some of the locals. And so now it takes 1 point to draw. So it's a every other year for us now, unless I pick up a landowner tag somewhere. My son is 18. I've wanted him to be able to hunt here every year since he's 12. So typically, if the year he didn't draw, I would his birthday present was a landowner tag typically, and it's a fun time for me and him to be up in the mountains. And we try to get a different season for him, but we're not hunting the same season together.
Hey, Brett,
Just
you're
gives us more.
breaking up really bad.
Oh, sorry. So yeah, I really have in the past few years concentrated on making sure my son has a tag, get him interested in hunting and keep him involved in that. Sometimes I think it can be frustrating for some of these kids when they realize that they could end up spending thousands of dollars and applying for 20 years before they can draw a decent tag. I think that gets a little frustrating for some of
Oh,
them.
yeah.
a big reason why we're losing some of our youth hunters. So if we can find a unit that he can hunt every year and keep him interested in it and, keep him going, it'll become a lifelong thing for him. My son will be moving away this year, and I'm a little sad about that. As many of you all that are listening know, when your kids can start hunting with you, it kind of makes it 10 times better. I'd much rather see my son get a good buck than myself nowadays. So I've really concentrated on him, and now I've got a daughter coming up that seems interested in hunting. So,
That's great.
yeah, I've been able to build points in some years for him and still pick up a second season tag or even a leftover tag that gets turned back in, which Colorado started doing a couple of years ago. I kind of
Yeah,
have
you got to
a
be like
love-hate
on it, right? You
relationship
have to be
with
like there when it pops back in
that.
there, it's snatching us.
Yeah, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with that system, but love it when you can get a tag, and I get upset when I can't sit there and refresh the computer every 5 minutes to make sure I pick up a tag where other guys can, that are sitting at their desk. So it can be a little frustrating, but at the same time, I've picked up some good tags for my kids that way. Just this year, I bought a landowner tag for an A-list tag, and I don't know if you know how that works in Colorado, but
No.
You can actually get one A-list tag and then up to two B-list tags. And
Okay.
typically, the B-list tags are cow elk tags or doe tags on private property. But this year, I was able to get a landowner tag that was an A-list. Shot a nice buck. It was around 174, 175, and then a couple days later, I ended up picking up a B-list tag that was floating around, and ended up shooting a buck that scored 227. So I was able to shoot two bucks in the
Nice.
same year in the same unit. So kind of a little bit of an advantage there if you can find the right units. There's not many units that give out B-list buck tags, but when they do, they're usually private land. And luckily, I had a buddy that had some private land, and we ended up shooting my best buck ever on a B-list tag this year.
Really?
So there's a few advantages here and there with Colorado. A lot of opportunities to either draw or buy a landowner tag or pick up a leftover tag. And it seems like if you want to hunt, you can.
That's good.
It's just putting in the time to make sure you can find a trophy animal in those units.
Right. I remember when I first the archery deer tag, that was over the counter.
Yeah, nowadays we don't have any over-the-counter deer tags here in Colorado. We have over-the-counter elk tags. I don't love hunting elk enough to go buy a landowner or an over-the-counter tag and spend much time looking for a good bull. I typically just put in for units I have a better chance at better genetics and good water and feed that year. But I still don't hold out for the top units in the state for elk because they take, 23, 24 years to draw some of the best units. And I got into this game about 12 years ago.
Got it.
But I have drawn a couple elk tags that are 4 or 5 points and taken decent bulls out of them.
Oh, nice.
So,
Nice.
but then again, I spend a lot of time scouting. But if I'm going to spend the time scouting, I'm obsessed with mule deer, so I spend my time looking for deer, and elk are kind of a filler for me. Most guys think I'm nuts, but that's the way it is for me. So.
I know a lot of guys just like you, man. But I'm one of those guys that it doesn't matter. I have a hard time picking what I like best because I like everything. Like I love elk hunting, I love deer hunting, I love muleys, I love whitetails. I mean, I just go bonkers for just everything, man.
Yeah, I've
I
always
just
wanted to
love I
hunt
love the
coos
chase, and it
deer.
doesn't matter what it is what I'm chasing.
Yeah, everything else beyond mule deer, they all kind of tie for second. I just love to hunt. My goal every year is to have at least 4 tags in my pocket. But I also apply for 50 to 60 tags a year between me and my son, in hopes of getting, 3 or 4 tags, and hopefully they're not on top of each other. That's been a problem too. But I figure if I put in for some high-end tags and some backup easy tags to draw, I should be good every year. There has been a couple years where I've drawn nothing, and then I'm scrambling looking for a landowner tag.
Mm-hmm.
Not this last season, but 2017, I drew two, I guess what you would call premium elk tags, but I didn't have a deer tag, and I almost didn't even care about my elk tags until I was able to secure a mule deer tag. But I've always wanted to hunt coos deer. I feel like anybody could become better hunters hunting coos deer. From what I hear, I think it would make anybody a better mule deer hunter.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Any type of hunter, picking those little guys out.
It definitely ups your glassing game.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
I
find it really, you're hard pressed to find guys that are better glassers than guys who are really good coos deer hunters.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, every time I go to an out of state, like, you know, not to take away, and this is definitely not a, you know, a battle of any sort, but I noticed that the guys that have hunt in Arizona consistently or from Arizona that been glassing their whole lives are so much more proficient at it.
Yeah, yeah. Last year I went on a hunt in Arizona, and with my lack of time to scout, I ended up hiring an outfitter, and my guide was huge into coos deer hunting.
Mm-hmm.
He was an incredible spotter. I mean, even I consider myself pretty good at glassing up deer and elk, and but I quickly learned I had a lot to learn from this guy, and that's another topic. A lot of guys have a hard time wanting to go on a guided hunt, but I can say, being a fairly new, I guess I would consider myself a fairly new big game hunter, seeing that I kind of really got into it 10, 12 years ago, I've learned a lot from some of these guided hunts I've been on.
Oh yeah,
and
for
if you
sure.
really want to, if you really want to feel insignificant, follow a bushman in Africa around for a while, and they'll make you feel like a beginner.
tracking by tasting the dirt and whatnot. Yeah, it's
<You're>
crazy.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I've never been to Africa, but I've heard a lot of stories.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So, I wouldn't consider myself, definitely not the best hunter. I have a lot to learn from other people, and I've learned a lot on some of these guided hunts. And, you know, Thomas Edison said that he didn't fail 1,000 times. It's just that the light bulb was an invention that took 100 or 1,000 steps. And mm-hmm. I feel like I'm on like step 200. I've got a lot to learn with the mule deer. Hopefully, I'll get there where I'm shooting 200 inch deer every year like some guys.
Right. Yeah. Nice. I want to go back to the draw for a second. So basically, is your strategy to shoot for the fences on your first choice and then just pick something that you know is a good possibility that you'll draw on your second choice?
Here in Colorado, being that we're on a preference point system, you can really kind of time when you're going to draw a certain tag for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I could put in for unit 44 mule deer, a huge trophy unit for mule deer, but I know I'm not going to draw it with 1 point. I have
right.
zero chance of drawing it, being that it's a straight preference point state. I'm pretty confident every year that I will or will not draw my first choice. I'm just putting it in there to gain my point.
To get a point, right.
Right, and then my second choice will be a lower-end unit that usually has leftover tags. And even some years I'm not drawing those, so then I'm scrambling trying to find a landowner tag when it comes down to
right.
time to hunt.
Okay.
So you can really kind of time things here in Colorado for the most part. Every now and then point creep will get you, but it's not often. So
you mentioned you prefer to hunt either the second rifle or the fourth rifle. What kind of, I'm assuming based on some of the stuff you said earlier, it doesn't matter. It that second season versus the fourth season, you're still going to hunt the same unit, right? You're not,
yeah.
It doesn't change.
Yeah.
You're not looking for different terrain. What kind of, What kind of terrain, what kind of landscape features, what kind of stuff are you looking for within a unit to hold a deer that you like to hunt?
No matter what state I draw, the first thing I do is I look for old burns, avalanche chutes, areas that really attract some of these bigger bucks that are, at least a mile and a half from any road is typically where I'm finding bigger bucks. We do a lot of backpacking in. Sometimes we're staying the night, sometimes we're not. But as far as where I'm hunting, second versus third or versus fourth season, it's typically some of the same areas. But in second season, if I've done a lot of scouting, I'm pretty sure that the group of bucks that I've found in the summer are going to be within a few hundred yards of where I saw them in July. They, at least where I hunt, they don't travel far. They've got plenty of food. They've got water in this couple canyons that I hunt. And probably most important is I look for areas that have good escape routes. These big bucks, they know where to go when they're getting pressured. And so if they've got a good escape route, and that's why I think a lot of these areas I hunt, I can typically find a good buck in year after year, even if they're not the same bucks I saw in the previous year. Second season I really like, because usually if you find one buck, you find five or six. Fourth season, if you find the does, you find the buck, So, like I said earlier, the third season's kind of my crapshoot season, but if that's the only tag I can get, I'll definitely hunt it.
Yeah, we have that situation here too for the coos deer hunts. We have this tag that's the very end of November and the beginning of December. And you can once in a while catch a little bit of rutting activity because the coos deer rut in late December, usually after Christmas. But sometimes you get a little bit of chasing or whatever in that early season. But it's that crapshoot. And those are usually where the leftover tags are because people, they've been shot at now a couple times. They've been muzzleloader hunted. They've been two rifle seasons. They've been already been through archery season, early archery season. So it's just like at this point, but I've killed my biggest Arizona rifle hunt. My biggest Arizona rifle coos buck was in that season. I kind of like that season. I like it because I like the weather. And it's for me, if you know how deer use landscape, you could still find animals that you're wanting to go after. And it sounds to me that's kind of like what you're doing. You like
Exactly.
because you said something like even though it's not the same deer, which to me means you're going to an area that even though it's one of these areas that you can shoot three deer out of it and three more bucks are going to show up in that same area the very next year because it's got something about it. And maybe you don't know that you're doing it, but it's something about it that is attracting those deer. And if you figure out what that is, you could replicate that anywhere you go in the United States. And you kind of said you look for this,
Absolutely.
you look for that.
I've got an area that, when I first moved here, I circled on my map in red, and really the nice thing about it is it's quite a ways away from any roads, but the backside of that mountain is a high traffic area all summer long with ATVs and motorcycles and campers and everything over there. And as the season kind of progresses, as you get the archery and the muzzleloader hunters, a lot of times it pushes these deer into this more distant canyon that not a lot of hunters know about or are willing to hike into. I always know I've got probably three areas that are in a, I don't know, 5 mile circle that I know that one of those three areas is going to hold a good buck. And I'm consistently going back to the same places every year. In fact, there's one canyon that we hunt that my friend and I were talking about it just a couple weeks ago, how we've probably shot eight bucks over 175 in the same canyon over the past 10 years. We just always are finding good bucks in there, and whether we can get them or not is another story, but because there's a lot of black timber up higher too that they can get into that gets it's tough to pick them out and that stuff, but they've just got plenty of escape routes and plenty of cover if they need it, but typically they'll summer there as well. And then when the rut comes around, There's always a ton of does in there, so I know bucks that I've never seen are going to show up at some point. That just this last season with my hunter, with my son, his name's Hunter, he had a four-season tag, which runs from a Wednesday to Sunday, and because of tests in school, he couldn't even hunt until Saturday, and that was going to be the only day he could hunt this year.
Wow.
So I spent a couple days after work going up and scouting a little bit and found some decent bucks for him, nothing huge, but knowing that we only had one day to hunt, he wasn't going to be too picky. And we showed up, and another hunter was walking right through the area that I had spotted a couple bucks for him, you know, just typical 22 to 24 inch 4 points. But these hunters were kind of kicking everything out, and we decided to pick up and move one canyon over, and he ended up shooting a buck I had never seen before in all my scouting all summer. That ended up scoring 181, and it was his best buck that he's taken in the years he's hunted. So,
fantastic.
The fourth season, you just never know what's going to show up. So
awesome.
It's definitely something to keep in mind. And I love the muzzleloader seasons too, just because the bucks are usually still in velvet a little bit. And sometimes they're a little rubbed, but typically if you find one buck, you find six or seven of them all together. And that kind of trickles into the second season as well.
Nice. Yeah. So. I've been wanting to get out there specifically for fourth season. I really want to try my hand at a rut hunt out there.
Yeah. And some
I don't
years,
know. I don't even know how many points I have, right? I don't have a whole lot. I think I've got like four or five.
So. Yeah. You're in a good spot. There, you know, 4 or 5 points can get you a lot of quality tags in Colorado. I really honestly believe that you could pick anywhere in Colorado and just go hunt it and end up finding a decent buck. Colorado just really has great mule deer. And, you know, I'm happy with my move here. I don't think I would have taken near as many nice bucks as I have had I not been able to hunt the same units every year.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
So being that you've hunted in other states, have you noticed that, is there any like behavioral differences about the deer in Colorado versus, let's say, Utah? Or, you know, you said you came here to Arizona hunt. Was it elk that you came to hunt, or deer?
Yeah, I hunted elk in Arizona. Oh, okay. But I've hunted in Utah, Nevada, New Mexico, Wyoming.
Okay, so New Mexico versus Colorado.
I haven't hunted deer there, but but you know, I'm always looking for deer no matter what I'm hunting. This last year I drew a Henry Mountains bison tag, and you know,
fantastic.
I spent more time looking for big bucks than I really cared to look for bison. but as far as behaviors go, I don't know. I've noticed a lot of similarities more so than differences, but you know, a lot of our season times don't line up the same. Utah's general deer season usually lines up with our third season here, typically, which I've already said, I don't love the third season just for the fact that it's kind of a crapshoot. And I kind of feel like Utah's seasons kind of line up with that same time frame too, where there could be rut and could not be, could be where you've scouted them, could not be, you know, so, I haven't noticed a lot of big differences, but I tend to like more open units, and I apply in units that are similar to what I hunt here in Colorado, which would be more open sagebrush and aspen or burn areas or above timberline with avalanche chutes. Those are kind of the units I center on, even if they're not typically known to be the best units in the state, just because that's what I'm comfortable with. I don't know how to hunt the big timber stuff, you know,
yeah,
big black timber pines. And I find myself kind of a fish out of water in units like that. I feel like I don't really know what I'm doing. And that goes for elk too. I'm more used to the pinyon juniper open stuff. And I've drawn some units, like I drew the Boulder Mountain in Utah, and I really didn't know how to hunt that thick stuff. I felt like a novice hunter, not being able to put my 15s on a tripod and look for miles. It was more I was looking 30 yards in front of me because I was in a jungle.
Right.
So I really felt out of place, ended up with a decent bull, but really kind of felt like a fish out of water
there. Were they running when you went? Yeah, was it a rut hunt?
Oh yeah, they were going crazy. I had the
Oh,
artery
okay.
tag, and actually, I on the fifth or sixth day of my hunt, I actually missed a bullet 15 yards. Don't ask me how I did that, but it ended up being shot by a lady in Utah that I think the official score was 456 or 454 or something like
456.
that.
Oh my
And he's the
God.
new world record with a muzzleloader. I missed that bullet 15 yards on the fifth day of my hunt, and haunts me every night
I
for the
bet.
rest of my life, I'm sure. So
Jesus.
I had my opportunity and screwed it up, but that'll eat at me forever.
Oh yeah.
So,
That's a
but
tough one to
yeah,
swallow.
yeah, it is. It is. That's been probably my most difficult. I've had a lot of tough pills to swallow over the years, but that one,
Me too.
that was a horse pill for sure.
Yeah.
So, but we learned from them all. I just lost my cool, which I think a lot of people would do, but that bull just had me at wit's end. I didn't know how to even react to it. So, but yeah, it goes for deer and elk and even antelope. I tend to apply for units that are similar to what I hunt here in Colorado every year, so I don't feel so out of water. And I've drawn tags in the past that aren't typically what I hunt, like that Boulder Mountain, and I think that's where a guide can really help somebody out if that's something you can do or are willing to do. But again, I learn so much from these guides of how to hunt different areas and different animals, and I wouldn't overlook that as a strategy if you're an up and coming hunter trying to learn on your own. I think there's a wealth of information that can come from a good guide.
Oh, I tell that
So.
to people all the time. I said, think of it as you're paying for a lesson, you know? A very
Absolutely.
important lesson.
You're learning from the professor himself, so on a one-on-one basis.
Absolutely. I'm a
So.
guide here in Arizona. I mean, I've been hunting since I'm 5 years old, so I'm not a novice. I still will go on a guided hunt.
Oh
I
yeah,
mean,
there's
honestly, if I could afford it, I'd go on a guided hunt every damn time. But
Yeah,
no,
I have
no.
the type
But
of
no, I mean, there's
job
something
that.
to be said about, doing it on your own. So, I mean, I'm exaggerating. I probably wouldn't go on a guided hunt every time, but I definitely would be paying for a bunch of private land hunts. I'd
Oh, for
definitely be
sure.
paying for, private land tags and whatnot if I could
Yeah.
afford it. I
I mean, I
mean,
get it. There's something to be said about a public land do-it-yourself hunt, especially
yeah.
even just a totally solo hunt. There's so much gratification that can come from that. But I would never look down on a person for going on a guided hunt. Just, there's a
Yeah.
wealth of information to be learned there. Even the most experienced hunters, you're going to find something that you can learn from that
Exactly.
guy.
Exactly.
So I've enjoyed every one of my guided hunts, even ones that I didn't end up. With an animal, I still walked away with a lot more
Right.
knowledge than I had when I started. So,
Yeah. No, I'm kind of glad. We actually did a whole podcast on that because there's a lot of stigma floating around about,
sure. Oh, I hear it all the time. I love
Well,
my
I mean, you
public
got
land
to either
do-it-yourself
guide it or
hunts.
whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't consider myself just the trigger man on a guided hunt. I feel like I'm an experienced enough hunter to know what I want to shoot and what I don't, but
Yeah,
having the
exactly. And
knowledge
you
of
know
the
how you
area
want
and
to make the
different
stalk or
tactics.
whatever. And yeah, there's
Yeah.
a, listen, we get guys in all the time that are super novice, and those are typically the guys that will go home empty-handed. And then you get the guys that have a lot of experience, they come with you, and those are usually the guys that go home with something. And there's a reason for that. Because it's
Sure.
not, you could be the best guide in the whole world, and unless it's one of these situations where you could like handhold and bring the person around with you and like, set them up and this and that, there's a lot that goes into it. You still got to be a
Sure.
hunter. You still
Sure.
got to be, and you got to be good at it. You still
Yeah.
got to be, when the time comes, you need to know how to make the shot. You need to be proficient with your equipment. Yada, yada, yada,
Yeah. And I
but
have the type of job that, taking the time off of work to drive to another state to spend some time scouting, it not only hurts me financially, because I don't get paid vacation. If I'm not there, I'm not making money, which many people are in the same situation. But it also comes down to my staff. If I'm not there, they're not making money either.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm kind of hurting their income as well. So sometimes a guided hunt actually saves me money
Yep.
in the long run, and I get to learn something from somebody new and create
Yep.
many good friendships over the years as well.
Nice.
So.
Well, I have one more question for you. Actually, I got a couple questions, but I'm gonna ask you one more question. 'Cause I think we covered a lot of the stuff just by our conversation indirectly. What is your, like, give me three tips or tactics that you use, like, that you've kind of grown accustomed to using, like, you've learned that these are, like, the things that kind of, like, make it happen for you.
I think about when I first moved here to Colorado, being fairly new to the big game scene, really just, buying the best binoculars and spotting scopes and tripods I can afford and just spending time behind a glass. I'm typically not a very patient person, but when it comes to hunting mule deer, I can sit behind that glass all day long. My son doesn't know how I do it. He's asleep and fidgeting and throwing rocks at everything, but I can sit in the same 3 foot spot for 18 hours out of the day and never move a muscle because I know the buck I'm looking for is there. It's just having the patience to do that. And I am definitely by all means not a patient person, but I've had to learn to be sitting behind that glass. Sometimes I just want to see what's over that next ridge, but I know that if I walk over that next ridge, I'm probably busting through some of the most prime stuff and ruining my deer hunt versus helping it. The other thing is spending time on Google Earth. I spend countless hours on Google Earth circling spots, and every year after every hunt, I use Google Earth as my journal. I write up where I saw deer, where I didn't see deer, and where I saw the does. And if you saw my Google Earth, it's marked up, and eventually over several years, you can make up a pattern on there and really find the areas that you need to concentrate on because you're consistently finding stuff in those places. And the third thing is I'm an extremely aggressive hunter, probably too aggressive sometimes. When I see something I want to go after, I'm grabbing my set. My strategy is coming to me as I'm hauling butt over there. Hunting with Henry over the past couple of years, helping him on some of his archery hunts, the guy has a lot more patience than I do. We see a nice buck that he's been targeting all summer, and I'm like, all right, let's go get him, and he's like, we gotta wait, we gotta sit here and wait him out, and I don't have the patience for that.
I'm like you.
So
That's my biggest downfall.
oh, me too. I've been on
But it's
several
also
archery
helped me kill
hunts,
a
and
bunch of bucks too. So
sure.
it's like I don't know what to do, you know? It's learning how to figure out when to be aggressive and when to be patient, I guess.
I don't have the patience to wait for something to bed down. I'm usually hauling butt over there, ready to knock him over, and I'm thinking up my plan on my way there. Where Henry has a lot of patience and waiting for the deer to be in the right spot, the right time and time of day. And I have a lot to learn in that area. So, I've been bit by being so aggressive, and I've ended up with some really good bucks because I was aggressive. And it's like you said, it's just knowing when to be aggressive and when not to be.
Yeah, I haven't quite figured that out yet myself, but I always lean on the error of being too aggressive, but
Sure. So, I think those three things have really led to some good success in the past, and I still consider myself I guess I would say an intermediate. I've got a lot to learn still, and I've just this past season, on opening day of my season, I missed a buck that another hunter ended up shooting that ended up scoring 197, and it was just a dumb mistake on my part before the season started, and If I could rewind time, I'd have a lot bigger bucks hanging on my wall than I do now.
Oh
I think
yeah.
we all would.
Oh yeah.
So,
That's for sure. I got a lot of the ones that got away
yeah, I'd have a
stories.
world record elk on my wall if I could rewind some time, but
Yeah, God.
unfortunately, that'll
Oh
just haunt me
man. That's
forever.
tough. For freaking 50 something. That's nuts.
Right.
Oh Jesus. Well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. I
Sure, I
definitely want to have
appreciate
you
it.
back on. We're going to talk about tag strategy because you put in for so many different states and you kind of have us. Well, we'll get to that when we have it. But I want to definitely do another podcast with you,
Sure, anytime.
and we'll work on that here coming up and in the near future.
All
Because I'd like
right.
to get that one out too before tag season is over.
Yeah. Now's the
So,
time. All
well, awesome,
right.
man.
Well, I
Thanks for
appreciate it,
coming
Bill.
on, and I appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
All right.
Have a good night.
You too. Hey, guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews. Plus, we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.